In this segment, we're going to look at the physical reality of houses in the early Roman period. What kinds of houses did people actually live in? And we're not going to talk this time about house churches. We'll do that a little bit later. But this is part of setting a whole context, a physical and social context, for the house church meetings, which then we will take up. Okay? So, first of all, in terms of meeting, Christian meetings, there is the question, did they meet in houses, in private houses, or sometimes in halls? And there's some evidence that sometimes they would rent a hall or something like that, and we'll talk about that later. So just to understand that here we're focusing on the option of houses, not only for church meetings, but what people lived in, you know, the real thing, the real reality. And we have to look at the Mediterranean pattern of house design with a central courtyard, which you still see today in many Mediterranean countries. And it's the way even businesses are built sometimes. You walk along the street and all you see are walls and doors and no front yards or anything like that. And then when you open the door, you walk in and you see this lovely courtyard. And the buildings, the rooms are built around it, you see. So here is an example. These are two floor plans. The one on the left is from the very famous House of the Veti at Pompeii. And you see the layout in terms of the way that the courtyard is structured, not right in the middle there, but with walls around it. So I'll show you this. The entrance is here. And then you have, and this is a particular design of a Roman house, and this is not true everywhere in the Mediterranean, but it often is, of the impluvium, which is an area with an open space here, and this is covered. But this is open, and the rainwater comes in, and that's their source of water supply. Originally, that was it. By the time of the first of the New Testament, most of these places have sophisticated aqueduct designs, and they're bringing fresh water from springs somewhere, sometimes miles away, and right into a central water system. And so the houses, if they still have this, it's additional water. It's water to water the plants or whatever, but they're getting a supply of drinking water elsewhere. But the original way is that this is your water source. And then these little buildings right around, or little rooms rather, right around the entrance, one of them would be occupied by a slave who was called an ostiarios, the doorkeeper. The person who is responsible to see who goes in and out. And so there would be side rooms over here, and these would actually be bedrooms in this area. And then you walk in, and down here is a kitchen, because then you go out into this very large peristyle courtyard here in this case, and the main dining room is here. So from the dining room, you're looking out into the courtyard, which had plants in the center, and this is covered, and all of the center is open. So you have a room for garden there. And there were a couple of alternate dining rooms over here. This one is much simpler, and it's from a little earlier. It's a couple of centuries BC, and at a place near Corinth. But it again shows you this basic design of walking into a place this is covered, this is open, and so you have the light coming in the center of the house, and it then illuminates everything else. So in this particular design, this says living rooms. Well, that's really bedroom. Kitchen here, and this particular one is labeled dining room here and anterooms here. I would have said that this was the dining room, actually, but who knows? I've never actually been on the site of this house. But the dining room is always located where you get the best view of the garden. So so those are some ideas of structure. Now the next picture that you're going to see is actually this house looking in from that direction. So you walk in the front door. And you get a sense here of what the beauty of this house, how it actually was. What they're doing, this is a house in Pompeii, and what they're doing now in some of these houses is sinking cement into the empty holes in the ground which contained building, contained plant roots. And by the shape of the plant roots, they can tell what kind of plants were there, and they're replanting it. So this is a rather luxurious house, and we're going from the luxurious down to the simple here. Now, these are two other house designs, also luxurious houses, from Pompeii. In this case, there were originally two different houses, and they one of them brought up the other and opened the wall here. So you have two entrances there and there. And then access to this lovely peristyle. And then this one had a big orchard even back here. So raising lots of vegetables, etc. And now here you see this characteristic also that is that you would see in a lot of places, and you still see in some Mediterranean places today. And that is that on the first floor you have shops. I've seen that in Chicago, as a matter of fact. You know, a tall building, apartment building, and the first floor is all retail. We do that a lot. So here, these would be bedrooms and smaller rooms, but then the entertainment area is really back here. The dining room is here. Now, where the dining room is going to be important when we talk about the arrangement of what we think goes on in a house church meeting. I'm not going to get into that now. This one, again, very large, and the same kind of a design with the peristyle here, and then this was actually a garden out there. So you get the sense of the entry, the open space, and everything sort of grouped around open spaces. Now, we get a little simpler here. And this is, a floor plan of some houses in Ostia, which was the seaport of Rome for most of its time. And I call these prefabs because they are all in the same design. These are four houses that you're looking at here. And we've now lost this sense of the open garden space, okay? So here is one of them, okay? There's a second, and then the same thing on the other side. And a staircase going up. So we know that there was a second floor, even though they're not, it's not preserved anymore. So you have very simple, like an apartment. Here's the entrance, and then you've got one room there, one, and then two, three, four, and then a larger one at the end, and probably this might have been the dining room because it's the biggest one, and these would be bedrooms. So much smaller, much more modest, maybe not a place where you could have a group of people, but a place where people are living. And that is also important, okay? These are called the garden houses by the excavators because they were in an area that was surrounded by gardens. So even though this would be like an apartment building maybe with at least two floors, maybe a third, still we think that the general atmosphere was fairly pleasant. And even simpler are these, what Migs, the excavator, called the casette tipo, the sort of typical houses or ordinary houses. So you have a design here. The L means latrine. These for sure had their own latrines in the apartment house. And I'm not going to go into great detail, but these latrines did not flush. You know, you had to clean them out. But again, this time there's a walkway in between, but this is one apartment right here. So small, with just a few rooms, very modest. And again, there were others on top. Now, here's the picture of the actual thing. What you're looking at here, this is this. Okay? So you get a sense of the walls are still preserved up to about here, and here's the walkway in between, and the access right in the middle and into these other rooms. Sorry, I went back instead of forward. There. Now, we also know that there were these extended apartment buildings. We have some archaeological evidence of them and more literary evidence of people making remarks about it, what it was like to live in them. They were called insulae. Insula, singular, means island. But it's the word that was used for these large apartment buildings that could go up 5-6 stories. No elevators, remember. And they were often built with very poor materials. And what you hear about from writers sometimes is the danger of fire and of collapse. So living above in one of these apartment houses was probably no fun. But some of them seem to have been better than others, and this is a case of one that was certainly the one in Ostia that was better, and it's called the House of Diana, and I'll explain that in a minute with the next slide. But here's the ground floor. And again, you have shops opening up to the street on the outside, okay? And then you have, in this case, a complex of two shops with three back rooms. And that is probably a place where a family lived. The people who operated the shops and lived in the back rooms. I mean, we have other examples of that. So that would be a very modest and very confined kind of living. And these are individual rooms. These would be rental rooms. In this case, what they found is in this back room in here in H, evidence of a gathering of people worshiping the god Mithras, the Persian god Mithras. And that is a really interesting example when I said that we think sometimes house churches met in halls or rented rooms of some kind. Well, here was a case of another religious group meeting in a rented room in the back, okay? So sometimes Christian groups may have done that as well. The second floor, this is a light well. Okay, this is open. On the second floor it is as well, because it's the same idea of the central place with that's open with light and rainwater falling in, etc. And the whole design of that is it's not only for light, putting light into the rooms around, but it's also for cooling. In very hot weather, at night, the cool air would descend in the center, and then it would move out to the rooms. So here you have again, here's a two bedroom, or a three actually a complex, then individual. These are all individual rooms. People just renting rooms, you know. This one is from is Rome, and I'll show you a photo of that too. Later, this is all that's left of it. From the second floor, third floor, fourth floor, there's a fourth floor existing, and you can see that these are small rooms and complexes of rooms. So these are two of the best preserved examples of this kind of apartment living. Now this is that one, the big one. And it's called the House of Diana because there was also some evidence of there was a statue of the goddess Diana found in it. And we have no idea what people actually called it then. But as you look down the street, you can get a sense there of neighborhood. You know, because right on the other side of it was right across the street was another house of the same size. And down across the side street, another one. And near there, a taverna, a place where you get fast food and that kind of thing. So it's a place in Ostia that I like very much, because you can stand there on the street and really get a sense of what a neighborhood was like, with the kids playing in the street and everybody knowing everybody, and very, very public kind of life, especially because of heat too, no air conditioning, no fans, and people spent time outside whenever they could. And this is the other picture, and this is the one with a model now at the top of that apartment house in Rome that is preserved. And you see, again, the model of shops, staircase going up from the back into the second floor. There's a third floor and a piece of the fourth floor as well. So that's all that is preserved. And here's the actual thing. This is the that insula, that apartment house that is preserved, right up against the. If any of you have been to Rome, one of the things that just stands out all the time is this monument to King Victor Emmanuel. Some people call it the wedding cake of Rome. It's this enormous. Turn of the, like 1900 or so, monument, and that's this wall. So it's right up against that, just at the bottom of the hill here, and people drive by it all the time and are not aware of what a valuable thing that is. One of the few remnants of how ordinary people lived. You've seen now this whole gamut from very wealthy to very modest, and people are living and raising their families and trying to make a go of it in all of these kinds of houses. There was no zoning, there were no zoning laws, and so you could have one of these apartments right next to a row of very wealthy houses. And it has to have been that everybody rubbed shoulders with everybody else. In some of our Western cities today, the rich live in the suburbs and the poor live in the city or whichever, and they seldom encounter each other. I don't think it was like that. I think they were encountering each other from different social levels all the time. And one of the things when we think about the Christian house churches, what we have to think of is, how did they handle that in their churches when they were trying to say that they were all one in Christ Jesus? Okay. So more to come on all of that.